tomorrow night at 9 p.m., regular programming on broadcast and cable news television and on radio will be preempted by the first presidential debate. However, neither Fox News, responsible for the cameras at the debate, nor several of the moderators have consented to the 32-page contract between the candidates that outlines the rules for the debate. Among other things, these rules address which camera angles are permissible, what temperature the hall should be, and when the candidates will shake hands. In theory, the candidates can back out of the agreement if it's not adhered to by the networks, and the moderators run the risk of being replaced by those who will. A bit later in this hour, Christopher Buckley will offer his comedic suggestions on additional guidelines for the debates. For example, business attire only, no helmets, padding, or elevator-type shoes. In that same spirit, we're issuing an email challenge now. Are there any rules you wish the candidates would agree to before stepping up to the lectern? Send us an email at totn@npr.org with your suggestions for what the candidates should be required to do. But first, the rules as they stand and what they mean for journalists covering these events and moderating them. Marvin Kalb is a veteran reporter and senior fellow at Harvard's Joan Shorenstein Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy. Thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Joe. Nice to be with you.
What are some of the rules that are governing, for example, television cameras at the debates?
Well, they've had this argument now ever since the 1960s debate. I was involved in one myself in 1984 between Reagan and Mondale. And I remember then, and I know now, that both political parties argue strenuously over every single issue to advance its own cause and to make their candidate look better than the other candidate. And, for example, they don't like angles that might show, for example, a profile shot. If one of the candidates decide that the left side looks better than the right side, you can get into an argument about that, too. What I'm amazed about, Joe, is that this late in the game, with the first debate scheduled for tomorrow night, that the networks have finally woken up to the fact that, wait a minute, there's a debate here and there are rules. I mean, there were 32 pages of rules that were set forth a week ago.
Yeah, this does have a sort of a strange quality to it. I mean, the networks I was reading earlier are saying, oh, you know, we don't make deals with candidates. You know, we do our own thing. But they always make deals with candidates. I mean, that's part of the game, I think.
It is very much part of the game. And from the very beginning, the candidates are really the determining force. The networks provide the time. They provide the moment in our national history when the two candidates get together, or three in some cases, and try very hard to argue who's the better man for the presidency. But the networks have been in bed with the two political parties from the very beginning, because the two work together, and there are advantages for each side. And, for example, it's very much to the advantage of a network to be able to claim after a debate that by 232 and a half people more than somebody else, they were watched by everybody else, and they figure they're going to get more commercials that way, and they probably do. So these are very important issues as they seem, but in the final analysis, they're really not important at all. Everybody knows there's going to be debates. The reporters can sign or not sign. I remember we had a big to-do about this in 1984 also. And we all ended up signing because nobody wants to pull out. Everybody wants to be part of it.
Well, I was just going to ask you. I mean, is this an internal game of chicken which will resolve in one way or another, or is there really something here?
Well, there's something here in the sense that the two political parties and the two candidates, for them, it's crucially important how they look, what it is that the correspondents and the pundits are going to say immediately thereafter. That's big time. That's important. But these things about camera angles and whether you sign a piece of paper or not, it all ends up being kind of silly to me because everybody wants to be part of it. It's too important. If I remember in my own case that once you're part of a presidential debate, you're part of a small group. And whenever the issue comes up, they turn to you once again and ask, well, what was it like in those days? And heavens, you can do all kinds of speeches based on just that one appearance.
Well, I didn't. Yes, okay. Well, then I guess I should throw my hat in the ring, although
You've
I
got to
don't.
get into it.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Well, in the end, as you say, I mean, is there something truly that the network, I mean, never mind what the candidates have decided and whatever the posturing is going on, is there something that the networks could do that would really help the public get a better idea of what was going on inside the room? Because we were talking yesterday with one of the moderators who said, you know, my experience in the room at the debate was very different from watching it in television.
Yes.
And I don't know whether, you know, it's important to create the reality of the moment or create the reality of the television, but is there really something that television or radio, for that matter, could do that would help people understand what these candidates are all about? Because presumably that's what they're doing by covering these.
Well, presumably each one of the moderators is going to ask the best set of questions that he or she can. So that's part of it, and that's in the ideal world. But yes, there is a way in which it could happen, but it never will. Because if the networks, radio and television, were to say to the two candidates, we will not give you the time, because this is all free, we're not going to give you the time to participate in, it's off, it, in fact, it's silly to call it a debate, sort of a joint appearance.
Right.
If, in fact, it's a debate, in other words, we will set some of the rules. We will interview you as if this were, let's say, Talk of the Nation or Meet the Press, or something like that. We'll decide. But in fact, that's totally unrealistic. Because, as I said before, both sides are in bed. Both sides gain from this kind of exposure. Both sides want to be part of the act. There's an enormous, both commercial and ego factor riding in all of this. And at the end of the day, these debates help determine who's going to be the next president of the United States, and that in and of itself is the biggest game of them all.
Right. So that said, you know, with these caveats, that's what I was going to ask you. It's not the best way of doing things, but it's the only way they're done right now. So you've got to watch if you're going to make a responsible choice in the election.
I believe that is the case. I think that we've been at this now so long, and the Commission on Presidential Debates, which was set up, and when it was set up, a lot of people had questions about it, but now it's the place to go. In 1984, with me, for example, it was the League of Women Voters. But now it's the commission. They're run by two first-rate people, and if we're to have debates, it appears that this is the way it's going to be, and we best just stop the games and get on with the show.
All right. Do you think, just now for your own personal view on all this, do you think that you said that it might have a chance to sway the election? Do you think that that's really possible? Are these debates so important for this election?
Yes, I still think it. They are. I know that the polls indicate that the president is going to win by 6 or 8 points. I simply don't quite believe it. He may yet end up winning, but I don't know about polls being the deciding factor. People still have to vote. That's the essence of an election.
Oh, that, yes.
Yeah, remember.
Oh,
And
that. Okay.
in this particular case, these debates will give people an opportunity to look at somebody for the first time in a sustained hour-and-a-half environment. Four times. It's going to happen 3 times with the presidents, once with the vice president. This is the opportunity to sell your case, to make your case. I think it's terribly important.
Okay, Marvin Kalb, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Marvin Kalb is a veteran journalist with 30 years of award-winning reporting for CBS and NBC News and is currently a senior fellow at Harvard's Joan Shorenstein Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy. He joined us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. At no time during these debates shall either candidate move from their designated area behind their respective podiums. So goes an excerpt from the 32-page agreement worked out on for the upcoming presidential debates. Other rules say the lecterns must be 10 feet apart. No props or diagrams will be allowed. And candidates are to walk out, shake hands, and then stay behind their respective podiums. If you could add some rules of your own to the 32-page agreement, what would they be? We're issuing an email challenge, so send us your suggestions for additional debate rules. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. You can also call us at 800-259-9231. 989-TALK. In the latest New Yorker magazine, Christopher Buckley offered up some of his own rules of engagement. Mr. Buckley is the author of the recently published novel Florence of Arabia, and he joins us now by phone. Welcome.
Joe, how are you? I'm speaking to you from Chicago.
Chicago, well.
Chicago.
The windy city.
I'm in the back of a car driven by a lovely lady from Poland. I'm on Ohio Street. It's how's that for an American story?
Well, yes, that's perfect. I don't think we could do better. And we'll hope that your signal stays with us. So let's get right to us. What are some of your rules? You've got one. Well, you can choose the one you want, actually.
Well, I picked up the paper last week and I saw about this incredibly detailed agreement they'd done. It's 32 pages long, you know. I guess you probably mentioned that.
Yeah.
So I got a copy of it and read it, and it read like the sort of handbook they probably issue inmates when they check into federal penitentiaries. I think they including the detail that each candidate can have a pen and writing paper, but they have to submit their pen and writing paper for inspection before they go on, presumably so that they don't contain miniature transmitters.
Right, right. And there's probably lead-lined podiums, so they can't use their X-ray vision to look through to... Okay. So,
you know, it's kind of crazy in foreign countries. I hate to cite France as an example of how anything should be done, but I watched a debate between French presidential candidates, and basically they just all you need for a French presidential debate is two chairs, a table, and a microphone. And they sit there and scream at each other.
That's a debate.
Good.
That's an informative debate. You really get something out of that.
Yeah, this thing is, whatever else this thing is going to be, and I'm hugely looking forward to it, I don't think the word debate is quite right.
Okay.
But anyway.
We've issued an email challenge to our listeners, but before we get to some of theirs, tell us some of the rules that you cooked up.
Well, let's see. I had a couple of rules in the New Yorker piece. Candidates must wear business attire and may not remove ties, belt, socks, or underwear during the debate. Candidates may not wear padding, helmets, or prosthetic devices, including elevator shoes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I see. Elevator shoes just
elevator
to...
Elevator shoes. Well, Mr.
Even the landscape, as it were.
Well, Mr. Bush there has the disadvantage. He's 5'11", and Mr. Kerry is 6'4".
And
someone probably figured out how far apart the podium should be. Didn't you mention 10 feet?
Yes.
And that probably allows... I bet they hired someone who knew trigonometry to figure out how far apart the podiums should be so that each candidate looks as though he's the same height.
Well, why don't you tell us, here's some of our listeners' suggestions. Here's Darcella Craven. She writes, the candidates must actually answer a question in a manner that does not require 40 minutes of explanation by a political pundit. That's not bad. Chris Falling writes, I think there should be a moratorium on snickering.
A moratorium on snickering.
Snickering.
Mr. Gore got bad reviews in the year 2000 because he kept sighing. Do you remember?
Yes. Although Marcella could be referring to the candy bar. I guess that was Chris Farling. We have to call him and get a clarification.
I think that's covered in paragraph 168, section B. No candidate shall bring chocolate bars
with nuts.
Debate with them.
So we don't run into anybody with the nut allergies. All right, last one. No spitting on, near, or toward the opposing candidate. That's Justin Lemming. Well, I guess Justin Lemming has the final word. Christopher Buckley, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Joe.
Christopher Buckley is the author of the recently published novel Florence of Arabia. His pieces, Rules of Engagement, appear in the latest New Yorker magazine. He joined us by phone. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.